You must have this and hold to it, or you'll die. By the time I awoke the next morning, I could not recall whether this was something Orlo had said in so many words, or a resolution that had formed in my own mind. Anyway, I woke up exhilarated and determined. In the refectory, I saw Frau Orlo sitting alone several tables away. He gave me a tight smile and looked away in the next instant. He did not wish to fill me in on his argument with Sir Trustiness. He ate quickly, then got up and headed in the direction of the Decade Gate for another day on the town. More important than the argument with Trustiness was my conversation with Orlo just before. I knew I could not talk about this in the refectory. It would not survive Dyax's rake. It would not be considered sound by the Avowed. Those of a more Prokian bent would say I'd become a kind of deolator. I'd be unable to defend myself without invoking all kinds of ideas that would sound ridiculously fuzzy-minded to them. At the same time, though, I knew that this was how the Sants had done it. They judged the oracle proofs not logically but aesthetically. I wasn't the only one with a lot on his mind. Arcibald sat alone, ate practically nothing, and then skulked out. Later, Tullia picked up her bowl and came over and sat by me, which made me happy until I understood that she only wanted to talk about him. Arcibald had been doing a lot of brooding, and he had been doing it in conspicuous places, as much as demanding that we ask him what was wrong. I'd refused to do so because I found it such an annoying tactic. But Sir Tullia had been checking on him from time to time. She let me know I ought to go and see him. I did so only because the request had come from her. After the reconstitution, the first Fras and Sors of the Order of Saint Edhar had come to this place where the river scoured around a ramp of stone and attacked it with explosives and water jet cutters, cleaning away the scree and rotten rock, which they moved to the perimeter and piled up to fashion the Consent's walls, until they hit the sound stone at the heart of the mountain. This they cleaved off in slabs and prisms that tumbled to the valley floor, sometimes rolling almost to the walls before they came to rest. The ramp became a knob. The knob was sharpened to a crag. The first thousanders whittled a narrow meandering stair up its face and went up there one day and never came back again, but pitched a camp on its top and set to working building their own walls and towers. The valley below remained a rubble field for centuries. The Avowed swarmed over the strewn stones wherever they had come to rest and carved out of them the pieces of the minster. Almost all of them were gone now, and the land was flat, fertile, and stoneless. But a few of the great boulders were still dotted around the meadow, partly for decoration and partly as raw materials for our stonecutters, who were still fiddling with the minster's gargoyles, finials, and such. I found Arcibald perched on the top of a boulder, surrounded by empty beverage containers that had been strewn around the place by slines. All around him, visitors were sleeping it off in the tall grass. Across the meadow, Leo was cavorting around a statue of Saint Froga, flinging the end of his bolt out and letting it waft over the statue's head, then snapping it back like a whip. I wouldn't have looked twice if this hadn't been Appert, but there were visitors on the meadow, watching, pointing, laughing, and speely capturing. Another useful function of Appert, to be reminded of how weird we were, and how fortunate to live in a place where we could get away with it. Exhibit A, Fra Arcibald. Speaking whole paragraphs, complete with topic sentences in perfect Middle Orth, with footnotes in Old and Proto-Orth, he explained that he felt aggrieved by his father's refusal to talk to him, because he was not so much abjuring his father's faith as trying to build a bridge between it and the Mathic world. This struck me as an ambitious project for a 19-year-old to undertake, 7,000 years after the two daughters of Canoas had stopped speaking to each other. Still, I heard him out, partly so that I could later impress Tullia with what a good guy I was, partly because I didn't want to be a Lorite, but also partly because what Arcibald was saying was nearly as crazy as my discussion with Orlo the evening before. And so, perhaps, after I had heard Arcibald out, he would let me confide some of my thoughts. But as the conversation, if listening to Arcibald talk could be called that, went on, this hope curdled. It had not crossed his mind that I too might have some things I wanted to discuss, perhaps not as clever or as momentous as what was on his mind, but important to me. I bided my time, and just when I saw an opening, he changed the subject altogether and ambushed me with a rhapsody about the exquisite chord. And so, instead of talking about what I wanted to talk about, I was forced to come to grips with the idea of chord as being exquisite. He wondered whether she might be open to an Atlantean liaison. I thought not, but who was I to judge? And a boyfriend who was, A, sterile, and B, only allowed out once every 10 years, seemed like a safe boyfriend to have. So I shrugged and allowed that anything was possible. Then back to Sewer Tullia to file a report.